everyone. I'm Lindsay Cuiava, the host of Flipping the Script, a podcast all about creating theater for modern audiences and inspiring you to make art that matters in your community. As a dramaturg and theater consultant, I see all the time how theater makers are stuck creating art that is sterilized and lacks connection to their communities, and especially lacks connection to young people. For the past decade, I have worked in conservative small towns and in liberal urban centers to create theater that engages audiences and brings communities together in impactful ways. Through this podcast, I am so excited to bring you awesome conversations around hot topics in theater today, slightly sassy commentary, a little bit of butt kicking, and inspiration to make art that matters. This week, I'm joined by a sound designer based in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Abe Gabor, who will be talking to us all about how to optimize our sound in our programs because, y'all, we have gone to, I'm sure, far too many shows where the sound design is atrocious that actually detracts from the quality of the performance. I actually don't think there's anything that's more distracting than horrible sound design. Like, I can sit through bad lighting design, I can even sit through bad acting, bad orchestras, but when the sound design is constantly giving us feedback or is going in and out, or some characters are super amplified and some are not, it drives me absolutely insane. So I wanted to have Abe on to talk more about sound design because he has such an extensive resume and background in all of this. Abe has worked in a variety of different settings, ranging from community theater and schools to professional theaters, and he actually understands what it's like to work in these different fields. He's not going to come on today and just talk about, well, what you could do if you had an unlimited resource or even a budget that is similar to what you'd find at a professional theater. He's going to come on and talk about what it's actually like to create good sound design at the school and community theater level. So I'm super excited for him to share all of his awesome knowledge. And thankfully, we recorded this before I had a horrible cold. So I will keep the rest of this intro very short. So one of the things that ReTheater does is every other month we host a tech talk where we bring on a tech professional to talk about a specific aspect of technical theater. And then they are also going to be available at the end of the month to do a Q&A and a short lesson helping you apply that technical skill in your program. In the past, we've always done these talks on our YouTube channel, but since we have the podcast now, and podcasts are so much easier to listen to than a YouTube video, we decided that we would transfer our tech talks from YouTube and onto the podcast. So Abe is going to be talking about two very specific areas today. And then if you would like, you can come join him on March 23rd at 9 a.m. Pacific or 11 a.m. Central. And he is going to be talking more about how to optimize your specific sound system at your school, how to utilize sound effects, and then taking your question and answers. So if you've ever wanted to have a sound guy that you could ask direct questions to or wish that you had that as a part of your program, you definitely do not want to miss out on this opportunity to work with Abe and to find out more information about sound design. We'll have more information about the tech talk during the podcast, or you can check out our show notes for more specific information. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Hey, Abe, thanks for joining me this morning. I really appreciate it.
It is great to be talking with you today, Lindsay.
it's a Saturday morning, but you are going to be soon snowed in. So I guess there's not much more to do than make a podcast.
That or shovel or play with Legos. Yeah. So.
You know, one of the two. Were you just on spring break this week, too?
I was on spring break, and I spent every day building Legos.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's like such an early spring break, I feel like.
My district didn't have spring breaks for many years, and then they decided we should have a spring break.
What? They didn't have a spring break?
Nope. So they tried to make a spring break that would be useful and not centered around Easter.
Okay. So. Got it. Well, It accomplished not being centered around Easter, since it just started at the beginning of Lent. So there you go. But that's awesome. Well, great. Well, yeah. So thanks for joining me. So for those of you listening, I heard in the intro that Abe and I have known each other for like ever. My first memory of Abe was when you used to have those super cool red pants and you used to do sound at Children's Theater.
For the music review group?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we were like, what were you, a show choir, I guess, kind of? But we didn't compete. So I don't really know. We were like a community thing. But yeah, that's what I remember you from. So we've known each other forever. And you're one of my favorite people to work with. Great.
Thanks.
Yeah. You're a great sound designer, but you're also just a really great theater maker. And so I'm excited to have you share some of your wisdom with everybody today.
All right.
So
hopefully there'll be wisdom.
Yes. So before we jump into that, would you mind just doing like a brief like overview of who you are and what you do?
All right. Well, currently, I am an educator and I teach fifth grade and I've taught for 20 years or so. But my theater beginnings go way back to eighth grade when a friend and myself were going to put on it was a dog show named The Lady and the Loin because we didn't know how to spell lion.
Wait, what? A dog show?
It was a dog theatrical performance, yes.
Like with actual dogs?
With
or
actual
are you
dogs.
Pretending to be dogs?
Yeah, no, it was actual dogs.
Oh my
he God. He was involved in theater and I was not.
Okay.
And so it was his way to try to convince me that I should also be involved with theater. So the lady was a full-size black poodle. The lion or loin was the yellow lab. And we wrote a show and forced people to watch it. It was amazing.
What?
Yeah.
I had never heard this story before.
Yeah. That's how I got hooked on theater. And then from there, I began working with a children's theater company in the city where I grew up. And my first real theatrical performance was a version of A Christmas Carol that took place in Texas. And I was kind of just there to watch what the lighting person and the sound person did. And my only memory from that show was me spilling a pitcher of water right next to the lighting board, thinking that I would never be invited back again.
Little did you know, you'd become the president of that organization.
Yep, and I would be one of the longest active members of that organization. So then that's really what started all my theater stuff, and that was in eighth grade.
Wow.
And then since then, just have done hundreds of concerts, theatrical productions with sound design, lighting, costumes, directing, all aspects of theater.
That's amazing.
And I eventually decided that sound was where I really wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like, one, kind of the least amount of physical labor, and two, it sound affects the show the most, I believe. And I've always done sound and thought about sound as though I were my dad, who is deaf in one ear. And I wanted to make sure that he could hear the shows. And I wanted to make sure that all the blue hairs that would come to the show could also hear the show. So they wouldn't just say, oh, look at those cute kids up on stage. I don't know what they're saying or singing, but aren't they cute? I wanted them to be able to hear the show and enjoy the show in addition to the cute kids up on stage.
So. That's awesome. And so how long have you been doing sound for?
Sound probably 30 years or so.
Wow. That's incredible.
That is incredible.
That's such a long time.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's great. That means you're really good at it.
Yep.
So.
And I've backed. There have been two times in my life where I've just said that I have to back off of doing as much as I've been doing.
Yeah.
So there have been two points in my life where I've just cut out chunks of shows. And so now I do a few productions a year only.
Okay.
Which I think is nice in my old age.
Yeah, you're so ancient.
Yep. Once you get to 40.
But so you work with a group in Minneapolis, correct? Doing sound for them?
I do work with Minneapolis Musical Theater.
Okay.
And I also do work with Lyric Art, or not Lyric Arts, Get rid of that, please. delete that. I also do some sound design with the Theater in the Round Players. So those are the two main groups, and I do one or two shows a year with each of those groups.
Okay.
And then there are some small groups that pop up also.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you have such a variety of experience that I think, and you also understand both the professional world and the community theater world so well that I think sometimes when we have guests on, they're only in the professional world. So sometimes the advice is like, well, that would be awesome if I had $100,000 for my budget, but I have $100, so I can't do any of the advice you gave me. So this is all going to be applicable to you regardless of what your budget is, even if it's $0 up to, if you are a school that has $100,000, that's amazing for you. But I think this will be a really great opportunity to share some valuable information about sound. And so before we jump into everything, I just want to put out there that this, as I mentioned in the intro, this episode serves as one of our tech talks. And so our tech talks are where every other month we have an expert in a technical field of theater come on, and they give us some really awesome advice and content about specific areas of theater. And then we have an open Q&A forum and a small teaching opportunity from that guest artist at the end of the month. So Abe's going to be giving us a ton of information. And if you have other questions that you have for Abe, or you want to, we'll talk about what he's actually going to be teaching in the Tech Talk Live. If you want more information about that, stay tuned at the end or visit the show notes, because we'll give you all those details. But let's stop talking about useless things and start talking about how sound is going to totally rock at everyone's school performances and community theaters this year. So, Abe, one of the hardest things, especially when it comes to tech, is actually finding people that know what they're doing. I think it's easy. I mean, everybody wants to be an actor. Like, when you think of theater, they're like, oh, yes, I will become an actor and I will be amazing. But we don't have as many people who are interested in the tech side of things, or at least it's not as apparent. So I'm wondering if you have any advice or thoughts on how to find or how to hire people and train them to get into sound design.
In larger cities, that's not an issue, because there are schools that are pumping out new people who are into the design. There are old people that have been doing it forever. I think in smaller cities, you will have more of a challenge. But there are people available.
Let's start with big cities, because that's probably easier to talk about. And then we can go to the challenge of small town.
Right. And the other thing is, I think it's important to note that people might call themselves sound designers, but that doesn't mean the same to everyone. So there can be many aspects, I think, of sound design, and looking for someone who has theatrical sound design experience is key. Because if they've just designed systems for rock concerts, churches, those items, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to know what they need to do for a theatrical production. There would be overlap between the two, but there are still a lot of different nuances between those kinds of productions, like a concert versus just a theatrical performance. My search when I moved to Minneapolis, I was searching for groups to work with. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of eye-opening as to where they were finding their people, because a lot of organizations will have resident sound people. And so some of the resident sound people that I found in different groups were individuals who worked for music stores, electronic stores. So stores that sold audio equipment. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can find a store that is actually dedicated to audio equipment, so not like Guitar City, but one that is built around the audio industry itself, they will know of people, or they might have people in-house who do design audio for shows. And if they don't have anyone there, they might know of people. Another group of people that I found that were hired as resident sound designers for theatrical company or theatrical groups were people who had just been doing sound forever. There was one organization in town that found a resident sound designer who had been on tour with lots of famous rock bands for years and years and years. And he decided that he was done with that and had a family and had kids who were interested, and then morphed his rock concert abilities to theater, which I thought was interesting. And so those two groups are kind of more untrained individuals. Then the third group of individuals that I found were that were resident sound designers for different companies were people who actually went to school for it and had training in audio and audio design for theater. And so in big cities, if you're looking for people, I would say looking at those companies that are specifically selling audio and lighting equipment for theaters and performance venues, looking at the universities and finding if there are students there that are looking for some side work. And I also think using other performing groups, so going to a different theater company and talking to the sound people and seeing if they'd be willing to come and venture over and work with you. Because I know a guy who is a resident sound designer for the Guthrie, which is a professional theater company in town. And then he also is the resident sound designer for a community theater group. And so there are a lot of really qualified people. It's going out and asking and bringing up the embarrassing topic of, I'm sorry, there is no pay or very little pay.
Right.
But would you do this because we are a group that, and then share your mission statement and share all the good stuff that you have done. And you might be able to, in a roundabout way, beg some people to come in and do work for you for very little money.
So, okay, that's a really great point you just brought up. So the whole idea of a lot of times we don't have a giant budget and we can't actually pay people what they are worth. And sometimes we have to ask them to do this for free. I'm a big proponent that I think everybody should be paid something at least, even if it's like a Starbucks gift card or you invite your entire production team over and you do a really nice dinner. But I think that if you want to have quality in your programs, especially when you're looking for sound design and you want to have somebody who's professional doing this, you have to be able to pay them something. And that will be another podcast in the future. I'm going to be talking with a friend of mine about how to work budgets and how to make something happen with no budget. So I think that's really important. But so have you ever worked for a group for free? And if so, what were some things that made you inclined to do that?
A lot of, as I go back, as I think of my past, all of my work with the children's theater in the city that I grew up in was basically for free. And okay. I donated my time to that group because I really believed, and I still believe, in giving kids the opportunity to begin working on theatrical shows as soon as they can in life. And I wanted to also try to bring a very professional side to the theatrical production, even if it's just in audio, so kids can begin to experience what that's like. So besides children's theater that I volunteered my time for, there wasn't a lot of other groups that I did volunteer time for. The groups that I would give my time up for free were groups that had a really good purpose in life. Children's theater, getting kids that opportunity to act on stage. Another group that I always volunteered my time for, they raised money to go build houses and schools in the Caribbean. They collected medical equipment for people who needed it, who couldn't afford it. And they did a huge benefit show / concert every year. And I volunteered my time for that. So now, my time, I get paid for most of what I do, except for theater in the round. They are classified as like one of the oldest community theaters in the Twin Cities. But when I look at them, I don't see that classic community theater show. They're very professional in what they do. Mm. And they have a pretty large staff of people who are paid to make sure shows come off as not the classical community theater show. And I volunteer my time with them because, one, I think they're a great organization. They have really nice people who work for them. They're very professional. But it is also an experience that's very different than anything I've done before. The shows that I do there are more of the straight plays where it's just audio, a true audio design with soundscape, sound effects. And so for me, it's kind of a learning opportunity to expand my sound from just amplifying people on stage to doing more of a true audio design. So that volunteering of time is really just a benefit for myself to improve my skills.
So I hear that it's either very mission driven or that it's also could be an opportunity for you to learn something and continue to grow in your craft. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And a key to that whole thing is you have to have nice people who are working there. You have to have people who are working on shows that are knowledgeable, that are friendly, that are people you don't mind hanging around for hours and hours and hours with without getting paid to be by them.
That is very true. Yeah.
It's very sad to say, but that's...
Oh my gosh, I never realized that's also how I pick what I do for free, which is very little now. But that's very true. Like, yep. Now there are some organizations that could never pay me even close to enough that I'd have to be able to be around those people. But I think that's something that's really interesting to think about. So even if you don't have a large budget, so say you don't have the money that you can go and ask somebody to come sound design for you, this is where I talk about how it's so important in your programs that you have a mission statement and you have a clear purpose and why behind the productions that you're selecting. Like if you are just picking something willy-nilly because it'll sell a lot of tickets or because the kids are going to have fun with it, and you consistently do this over and over again with no real backing, people who work professionally are probably not going to be as inclined to work with you as opposed to if you were actually doing something that they could see a value and an impact in the community when they worked on it.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, yeah. Building up the credibility of an organization will bring in better qualified people to work on shows.
Right. And I think that that's pretty easy to do. It will definitely take some mindset shifting for you potentially if you are out there and you are just picking the big name shows every year. But
Jesus Christ Superstar.
Jesus Christ Superstar.
Every year.
Yeah, so if you're going to keep picking those shows, you aren't going to draw the people that are willing to just do this for free. And I think that, Abe, it was interesting to watch your evolution just from, like, knowing you when I was, like, what, 13, I think, to when you left WASA. So it was interesting to watch, like, how you, like, just because you and I worked together really closely for about, like, 5 or 6 years. And just like the organizations and who we chose to work with and like how it was interesting to see now looking back how that thread of like what's the mission and what's the purpose really came through and helped you come into different organizations.
Right, right. And I think minimal pay even shows that appreciation.
Oh, yes, I'm sure I did not pay you even close to what I should have paid you for Introspect.
But it was a good organization. It is one that I believed in and I wanted to see succeed.
Yeah.
And so minimal pay can help provide that level of professional quality, even if you don't have a budget that is outrageous for staff.
Yeah. No, I think that's, yeah. So keep that in mind, teachers. Again, this is why your why is important. So you also had mentioned a few minutes ago about how there's different classifications or different titles for sound design. Would you have any recommendations? Because especially if you don't know about the sound world, are there any like skill sets that for sure you should have like on a checklist or on like a job posting, even if it's just in your head, when looking for someone to work with you on sound design? Because I think we all know this. People in theater are super egotistical and are like, oh, well, I did sound for my high school program 40 years ago, and I'm an expert. And so how can you kind of like help actually navigate who's qualified and who's not?
Correct. Schooling and a resume are nice, but that doesn't mean they're the greatest people to work with.
Right.
I personally think the best way to evaluate a person's abilities is it's to go see their work, to go see shows that they have done design for, use like recommendations, talk to the groups that they have worked with to see what they were like as a person, as what their product turned out to be. But the real life experience, at least for me, was the most valuable since I didn't go to school for sound. I learned everything through other people who may have gone to college for audio, but a lot of it was self-exploration and experimenting with audio and seeing what to do, how to do it, and how to make it best. So, having that college degree isn't necessarily the end all to finding the perfect person. I also think finding someone who has done work with theatrical productions is an important thing.
Yeah. So I think that keeping those things in mind, and sometimes I think it's really easy for us to just be like, oh, yeah, you want to do sound? You want to help out? Come help out. But sometimes that might be a nightmare for you. So having some things in your toolbox that you can pull out to make sure like and test the situation is always a really good thing. What about, so we talked a little bit about big cities, which if you live in a big city is awesome. What about if you live in a small town and your resources are limited? What would you give advice about with that?
Well, I think back to some of the groups that I've worked with and what Re Theater does, where having artists in residency, you'll often bring in people for an artist in residency that work with the entire cast, work with the actors. But I think there is a benefit to probably doing the same thing with the technical side, is bringing in people who are tech savvy to work with your crew. And when you think about the expense for that, if you equate that to bringing in an artist in residency who works with the entire cast versus a tech person who's going to work with 5, 6, 7, 8 kids, it might just seem like a ill-balanced budget.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a benefit is that that person who's coming in, if it's an artist in residency, or you find someone from a city and you bring him in for the weekend to work with the crew, or someone knows someone who lives far away and they're visiting family for a weekend, is that not only can they work with the kids, but they can work with the director. They can work with, if it's a high school, the high school AV people. They can work with parents who might have an interest. And so instead of just training those kids, they could be training a lot more people. And then in future shows, it could be kind of a brain trust of individuals that work together to make sure that the audio works out for that show. I always think the best directors are those directors who have experienced all aspects of theater personally. So they've done costumes for a show. They've done lighting. They've done the acting. They've done audio for shows. And so when thinking of bringing someone in, it's not just really training the students, but it's training the director and everyone else who has some interest in being there. Because the expert's going to leave at some point, like you leave at some point, and then they're left to fend for themselves to some degree. And so the more people on board, the better off it would be.
Yeah, I think that's a really awesome point. So I know that it's really easy to find residency programs for actors. I mean, you pretty much just can throw a rock, or I guess just, I don't know, you can't really throw a rock and hit an acting residency, but you could just like type acting residency into Google and get 5,000 responses. But I think one of the things that we do with ReTheater with our premiere package is we actually include, if we include 7 days of residency, and up to two of those can be tech specific. And so we can have people like Abe, like Marcus, who did a podcast with us a few weeks ago. They come in and they actually help train your students in the tech while they're working on tech during the production, or they can come in and do a residency with them as well. And we're not the only people that do that. So this isn't like a plug for ReTheater. Not at all. So but I think that's a really important thing, is thinking about what's actually going to help advance your program. And if you don't have a person in town, if you don't have those resources, then sometimes, you know, pulling the trigger and bringing in that residency is going to make a huge difference. Because once, especially if you can get some freshmen in there, and if they get really passionate about it, if you can get an adult that's gonna like really be there as well to soak in that information, then by the time that kid gets to be a senior, you could have an entire program, a technical program where kids are training each other. And yeah, it might not be perfect, and they might go to college and cry their first semester like I did and be like, none of the training I got actually was useful. But at least they will know what they are doing, and that can help with the overall quality of your show.
And I think when you bring in someone from the outside world, if it's an acting residency, if you're bringing in a technician who is going to design the set, or you're bringing in a sound person who's going to do training, a lighting person who's going to do training, as soon as you bring in someone from the outside world, it begins to create a hubbub of excitement. Mm-hmm. It begins to really excite the cast, the crew, because someone other than who's usually in the group is there helping. And that excitement and enthusiasm then can just elevate a show even more.
Yeah. I think that's, it also will help, you know, show your district that the theater arts are important.
And so if you can't afford still finding someone, or you don't have a friend who has a uncle's, who has a son who does community theater in Akron, Ohio, that can come in for the weekend. There are churches. A lot of churches have become very theatrical.
Oh, that's such a great point.
Very, not like how I went to church. Right. And where they have bands and they are mixing in multiple singers. And I think finding individuals who even do audio at a church could be helpful. And before you'd go ask anyone, it would be building up the courage to go into that church and go to a service and see what their work is like. But I think there are outside people who are outside of theater that could be useful also.
That's a really great point. I didn't even think about the churches. See, this is why I love having other people on who are much smarter than me and talking about these things that I just don't know that much about. So that's a really, really awesome point. So this is really awesome insight, Abe. Thank you. This is like awesome. I think that most of the people that are listening at least can take one of those resources or those ideas and apply that to their program and find those resources in their community.
Yep. And if you can find people who are able to actually come to your school, your venue, I think you could do a lot through email, telephone calls, video calls to individuals. So if you can't find someone to come in, but you know that this professional group, like the Guthrie, they have two or three audio house audio designers, maybe you can communicate with them and see if they'd be willing to talk to you for 20, 30 minutes if you get stuck on something. So you could also do a lot of communication over the phone for certain aspects of sound design.
Yeah. And I think one of the aspects that you can definitely do via phone and email is talking about how the technical, like the different ways that, especially when you look at sound design itself and how we use like ambient noise and all that, how that can be helpful. And we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk about how sound design can either destroy your program or your show, or it can make it even better. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
If you're enjoying this podcast and hearing Abe and all of his thoughts and ideas, and you think he's totally rad, like I do, and you would like him to help you turn your program sound from maybe less than stellar to absolutely spectacular, I'd love to invite you to join us for Abe's Tech Talk on March 23rd. All of our Tech Talks are online. They're super easily accessible. And what you get during it is plenty of time for Q&A. Plus, Abe will be doing a lesson on how to optimize your sound equipment in your theater and how to use sound effects in effective ways in your programming. If you're not able to attend the class live, it's not a problem. You're actually able to submit questions ahead of time, so you will be able to have Abe answer your questions regardless of if you're there live or if you're watching it in replay. The class itself is $20, but you guys, seriously, you get access to a sound guy and get to ask amazing questions. It's totally worth it. But if you have not attended one of our classes before, your first class with ReTheater is always free. So all you need to do is use the code FIRSTTIME at checkout, and you'll be able to attend the class for free and get the recording, just like everybody else. So if you're ready to take your sound from static to super, join us on March 23rd. More information is in the show notes. Now, let's get back to the episode.
All right, welcome back, everybody. So, Abe, before we took that short break, I kind of mentioned how sound design can either totally destroy a performance or make it awesome. And this is something that you and I talk about and have joked about for a very long time, because we have worked on productions where there's ridiculous sound or ridiculous elements that are put in that we're like, that's an interesting choice. And there's also been times where I've worked with you and the sound that you've added in has really been incredible. I remember one time specifically when we were doing scenes from an Italian restaurant in 2011, and we had a war scene in the show, like a flashback, and you didn't tell me that you had found sound effects for that scene, and I was sitting during tech and like tossed my binder and all my stuff because I was like, oh my gosh, what is happening? But it made the scene absolutely incredible. It really brought together, there was like some other technical elements that had been in place to like make explosions look like they're happening, but you actually made the noise so it made sense. And so I think that's like one of my favorite examples of how you've used, because it could have been really, really cheesy.
Right.
But it wasn't. So, and I've seen plenty of shows where I'm like, that is the cheesiest sound effect in the universe. I'm so glad that you did that. So talk to us a little bit about how can you make sure that your sound design isn't destroying your production, and how can it actually elevate it?
All right. With sound, it's, by the way, did you like the Party in the USA exit music that we'd play also for you?
Oh my God. I will mention that. Or when you put the Party in the USA ringtone as her ringtone.
Yeah. All right. Anyways.
I'll mention that as well, because Joey and Marcus will get a kick out of it.
Yeah. And all the Legos that I've been building this week are the Chinese knockoff ones that Joey has convinced me to buy. So.
Wait, there's Chinese knockoff Legos?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know this. Like, wow.
They even create logos that look like it. But anyways. Okay, I dropped a Lego. All right. So I think audio and sound for shows needs to enhance a show. And when it's done well, you don't really even realize what's going on. It's like if you read theater reviews. In theater reviews, they will only point out when audio sucks. They usually don't point out when audio is good. And good audio doesn't stand out. It doesn't make it so people think, oh, wait, I heard a bird for 5 minutes in the beginning of this scene. It actually, though, transforms them into that scene and transforms that scene into something realistic. And with sound effects, they can be super cheesy. They can be really terrible. But on the other hand, they can also be really good. It just really, I think you have to look at that scene and think to yourself, does noise need to be there to help enhance the scene? If a script says that a certain sound effect has to be there, you can, as a director, think to yourself, or an audio designer, think to yourself, well, do we need that noise there? Is it necessary for figuring out that scene? Does it embellish the scene, or does it take away from that scene? Mm. So my work with the Theater in the Round, where they do mostly non-musicals, the sound design requires a lot of sound effects to help create just this incredible world. And so for one show, for example, it was set in the 1930s in London, and it was in a guy's apartment. And there were some pauses in dialogue that were written, but as we were in the theater listening to these pauses, it was just very strange to have no noise, because they're in an apartment in the 30s in London, and there is a pause in what they're saying, and it's silent. And so at that point, we ended up putting in some old timey car noise, just to fill that pause, to make people remember, oh yeah, this is busy city, long time ago. And so that kind of noise helps enhance a scene versus being distracting. And part of that enhancing also is how loud it is and where it's coming from. So being in the venue, listening to it, and if you have the ability to place speakers in different locations, it really helps. The Theater in the Round obviously is in the round. And so audiences 360 degrees around the stage. And so in that venue, we do a lot of speaker placement everywhere, where we will put a speaker in one corner or in one section of the theater, just so sound comes from a directional area versus being everywhere. And that can really help, once again, enhance a scene versus ruining a scene. On the other hand, I think if I put a speaker behind some audience members and there was a bird chirping loudly for the entire scene, that would...
they might not like that.
That would destroy the scene for that person. And maybe the rest of the audience, too. So to enhance a scene, appropriate sounds that are appropriate for that time period, a level, an audio level that is just right. And if you can place speakers in different locations, I think that is also super helpful. I forgot the original question.
No, so like what would help, just what elevates a production sound-wise and what destroys it?
Right. So besides sound effects, for general audio, there is always a fine balance in that audio balance and that audio level. You need to make sure that the audience can hear what's going on versus just seeing what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of groups, even in small venues, don't feel microphones are necessary. Like they will, if it's a 250 seat little black box theater, a lot of times the group will think, oh, we don't need microphones. But in my experience, even in the smallest of theaters, microphones are very important. And so, for example, there is one of the 40,000 high schools in my city. They recently did a show, and my parents went to it, and it was, I don't know, some non-musical. But the cast was not mic'd for it. And so they were in a high school auditorium. The cast was not mic'd. And both of my parents And they didn't sit far back in the auditorium either. But both my parents couldn't really hear everything that was happening on stage. And so at that point, you've just ruined the show for at least two people because they couldn't hear what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so if you are miking, it doesn't mean that it has to be blaring in your face loud audio. It just means that you're amplifying the voices to some degree. I've done enough shows where the amplification is so subtle that you can hear the people on stage, like, actually talk, but you can also then hear some of the amplification. So it's amplifying it just a small amount so that everyone in the venue can hear. It doesn't have to be loud rock and roll volume. And so microphones, unfortunately, have really become a necessity in theater, I think, unless you are a super duper small venue. Okay. Yeah. So to take your audio from being yucky to being an enhancer, mm-hmm. picking sound effects, creating a level, volume level that's appropriate, making sure that your audience, wherever they sit in the venue, can actually hear what's going on. And unfortunately, that often costs money.
Yeah. So is there any, I know a lot of schools don't have access to like a ton of microphones or even one, or maybe they only have like four. Is there a way that you can kind of like jerry rig mics that you can, that can help with this issue of amplification in these settings?
Well, with a carefully planned out mic plot, you can often get by with a low number of microphones because you can figure out who truly needs them and who can switch them from person to person. I think for a lot of shows, you can also benefit from boundary mics, floor mics, hanging mics to help with that amplification of sound. One of the shows that I did at the Theater in the Round was a musical, which they don't do often there because it's pretty challenging.
Okay.
And so the issue that I thought we were going to have was during a song, if the person is singing facing away from me in the audience, so they're facing the other side of the venue,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to hear a lot of the band and I'm not going to hear a lot of the voice. And so right. my solution to that was, to use hanging microphones, but they're really against that amplified voice, which a lot of groups are.
Mm-hmm.
And so the microphones were there to just enhance the voice a bit, but not overpower any of the audience members. And the solution to that was to have a few microphones hanging, and the microphones that were hanging sent audio to the opposite speakers. So in that venue, they have a ring of speakers that hits the entire 360 degrees of the theater. And so the hanging mic, for example, that this man is singing into away from me is pumping audio out of the speaker that is pointed at me behind him. So the microphones always send sound to behind that actor. And it worked out really well, because the mics were super low in volume and it helped compensate for the orchestra just enough so that people could hear wherever they were in the venue. And just, I don't know, I think a lot of times when directors hear about miking kids and amplifying the orchestra and all of that, they think it's going to be just loud and rock concert-like.
Mm-hmm.
But someone who is knowledgeable in what they're doing sound wise won't do that for every show. There are certain shows that do require it to be loud and in your face, but a lot of shows just require it to be amplified so people can hear.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. That it doesn't have to be like this loud raucous thing. It just, we need to be able to hear people better. Also want to go back to the sound effect thing, because this is one of the things that drives me insane. Is I feel like a lot of times we don't take enough time to fade things out. And it's very distracting. that, like, if you have that back ambient noise, like, all of a sudden it just goes away. It's the same thing with lights for me, and I think maybe I'm just, like, very sensitive to things. I'm like, why was that fade only 5 seconds? Like, that seems very quick. Do you have, like, a general rule of, if you do have, like, that background noise going on, how long should you take to fade out?
Depending on the noise, if it's birds chirping.
Yeah.
For example, you could just cut it off with a last chirp, so it doesn't fade out.
Okay.
And then bring in that bird chirping a few more times throughout the scene, so it just doesn't seem like, oh, there's a bird, now it's gone forever. Because
sure.
Most likely the bird would still be hanging around the garden or wherever they were. And so a bird who's sitting in the tree is not going to fade out. A bird right. who's sitting in the tree is just going to stop making bird noise. And so one technique would be just stop the sound effect at an appropriate moment, like after a bird chirp.
Mm-hmm.
But then bring in that bird chirping a few more times throughout that scene. If you're going to fade out things, I don't really have a hard set rule, but there will be times where I will start sound to bring people into a scene, and then over the next 5 minutes, it will slowly fade out. And it might be a more gradual fade at the beginning and then a slower fade, but it could be dragged out for 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes as it fades out. It's just really whatever sounds good and doesn't make your hearing awkward. And I think taking in that input from other people who are watching the rehearsals, the tech rehearsals at that point, and seeing what they think is also super vital. Because as a sound designer, I might think, oh, this is going to be awesome. And then I play it. And I think, oh, this is really awesome. But if I ask someone else about it, they'll say, what are you doing? What is this? I don't understand what's going on here. And so just like every aspect of a theatrical production, I think everyone should have some voice and express their opinions about what's going on with audio or what's going on with lighting or sound or any of those. Just, and it can be done in a nice way. You wouldn't go up to an audio guy and say, this really sucks, you should change this. But if you are unsure of something, asking about it or just voicing an opinion. Like with lighting, a lot of times I'd love to go ask lighting designers, why did it get so bright so quickly for that song? And then all of a sudden it got dark again.
Mm-hmm.
I've never understood that component of theater where the lighting gets super bright during a song and then is gone after. But
yeah, that's a really good question. I'm going to write that down and ask a lighting designer that question on
ask
one of
Marcus
these podcasts.
That question.
I will ask Marcus and see, like, Marcus, why do you do this? Abe, this has been, like, such great information. I feel like just listening to it, I have so many things that I can take back to my next production that I work on. You are going to be teaching a workshop for us, though, on March 23rd. That is for part of our Tech Talk series. So on the Tech Talk series, we're going to have a lot of time, about an hour for question and answer for everybody who attends live. You can submit questions ahead of time. So if you can't attend live, you can still get your questions answered. But you're also going to be teaching a component as well. And I was wondering if you would just kind of talk to us a little bit about what that is that you're going to be teaching.
Yes. on that day, I'm going to talk more, a little bit more, I think, probably about sound effects, a little bit more about wireless microphones, a little bit more about making sure sound really enhances a show versus distracts from a show, but also talking about just audio systems and how we can maximize the system we have to make the show the best possible show we can audio-wise. Because you might think your system is kind of lousy, and it might be, but there are things that can be done easily with it or simple supplementing of it to make it really a good system to work the best for your production.
Which sounds like crazy valuable. And something that I see teachers talking about all the time. I get questions about it, which whenever I get a tech question, I start to sweat profusely. And because I don't even have any small information, which is why I have great people like Abe as one of the mentors for our Read Theater Spotlight program so that he can answer those questions. But if you would like to come and learn more about that, we would love to have you there. As I said, it's on March 23rd. It's at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So that's noon Eastern and 11 Central. It's 75 minutes. Abe's going to do a little bit of teaching. You can ask all the questions. So you'll actually be able to ask about your specific system and get feedback on that. You can go to the link in the show notes. It's only $20. That's it. To come. Like, that's crazy. And you get one-on-one, well, it's not one-on-one, there's going to be other people there too, but you get to ask your question directly to a sound designer. So it's a pretty cool deal. If you guys have questions about it though, always feel free to hit me up on Instagram or send me an email, and I'm happy to talk to you about that. And as always, the first class that you take with Read Theater is always free. You just use the promo code FIRSTTIME, and that gets you it for free. So if this sounds awesome to you, and like you want to join us and you've never seen what this is all about, you can use that first time code on any of our masterclasses or tech talks. So yeah, so Abe, I can't wait for, it's going to be in 2 weeks from now, so when we recorded this, so I can't wait for you to be there. But before we let you go and say goodbye, do you have any tips for educators or theater makers out there about resources that they might not know about that can help them better their sound design?
Why, yes, Lindsay, I do.
Oh, well, thank goodness. Tell us about them, Abe.
There is a free subscription to a magazine called Light and Sound America. And within Light and Sound America, there are different subcategories that you can sign up for. You can sign up for example, church audio or lighting specific things. And as I said, it's a free publication because it is paid for by its advertisers. And I like looking through and reading the articles of both the Light and Sound America magazine, because that magazine itself touches on all of the biggest, newest things that are happening. And so it will follow the national tours of concerts, the international tours of shows and concerts and opera. And it does anything where lighting and sound would be involved. They have articles about it. And I think any good theater person would nerd out over reading about the audio, lighting, video, staging system of, for example, Jay-Z and Beyonce's latest concert, because it breaks it down and talks to each of those individual component designers, like the lighting guys, the sound guys, and it just breaks down the tours and the shows in all
that
those aspects.
That is so cool. I've never heard of this.
Yep. And then the supplemental one I mentioned was like the church audio one, and I think that one's really nice for community theater people or people who are just interested in audio, because there are a lot of quick articles that explain what different items in the audio world do and how to use them. So compressors, for example, they might have an article about what compressors do, how they work, how to maximize them to benefit your audio. So lightandsoundamerica.com. You can sign up for free subscriptions for their publications, and they do print magazines and they also do online publications.
That's awesome. I totally am going to subscribe to this. That sounds really cool.
It is. It's very neat.
And Abe, do you have any upcoming projects that you want to plug that are happening in the Minneapolis area?
I am in the middle-ish of the design phase for the next Minneapolis musical theater production, which is Be More Chill.
Wait, what was it? I haven't heard of that show before.
Be More Chill?
Chill,
yeah.
Huh, weird. Yep, never heard of it.
Yeah, it happens to be, I think, on Broadway right now.
Oh, really?
Yep, and somehow they are letting other groups do that show, though.
Which I think is kind of brilliant.
Yep, because it's not often that a show on Broadway that's brand new is available for other groups to do. So
right. Well, and it's like in total juxtaposition to what's going on with How to Kill a Mockingbird. where they're like pulling the rights from every right. community theater, even though it's a totally different script. Yeah. And the Be More Chill people, besides just, you know, revolutionizing storytelling on stage and appealing to a younger generation, they're also revolutionizing, you know, the way that we are looking at Broadway rights and stuff. I actually say that without seeing the show, and I will be fully transparent. I don't understand it, so I can't wait.
It's for an interesting
to do it, so we can talk about it.
Yeah, it's the script is an interesting script. The premise is kind of fascinating, and yeah, it has, I think, a lot of moral stuff to it that could freak people out, probably.
Right, which is like my jam normally. Now I think I'm officially old. Like I feel like I'm like you and the other people that I was like so excited about Spring Awakening. We're like, huh, okay.
Yeah,
that's cool, Lindsay.
Yep.
But okay, so when is that going up? Because I bet if you are ish in the Minneapolis area, that's something that your students might be interested in, or you might be interested in going to see as well.
Yep, and it's the month of April.
Okay.
At the Illusion Theater, and what I was going to mention about this is I've never been in this venue.
Mm-hmm.
I have not gotten any technical information about this venue yet.
What a dream!
It is a dream. We have sort of a hard time communicating with this venue, but it's a 230 seat venue on an eighth floor that has 21 feet of fly space, I know. And so for me, I'm trying to figure out my audio design, which includes not just the amplification of cast and the rock band and what sound effects are necessary, but what am I going to have to do to supplement an audio system, or am I going to have to bring in a complete audio system? It's all very unknown right now.
How exciting for you.
It is very exciting. Yep.
So you can come see what Abe does with his sound with no information. Gotta love working in theater sometimes.
Correct.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, I would totally, if you're going to be in the Minneapolis area, or I mean, it's probably even worth a drive because it's cheaper to go see it in Minneapolis than it is to go to New York. Especially once the reviews, and the Tonys come out, I'm sure it's going to be impossible to get tickets to if it's as good as everybody is saying that it's going to be. So,
and this group is referred to as like semi-professional because
great.
Everyone, cast and tech, they get paid for their time, and their work.
That's awesome.
They do. Yep. They do nice shows.
Yeah. That's great. Well, cool. Well, thank you, Abe, so much for joining us. If any of you want to work with Abe more closely, or follow his work, is there a website people can go to find out more information about you?
There is www.abegabor.com, spelled ABEGABOR.
So that is
.com. Yep, that is an informal online resume that I have for all the work that I've done for years and years and years.
So. Yeah, that would be great. So you can check out there. Otherwise, you know, Abe is one of our mentors in our spotlight group for educators and theater makers. So he's in there all the time giving super awesome advice and helping people make their programs better. So if you are interested in that, check that out as well. There's information about that in the show notes, as always. So thank you, Abe, so much for joining us.
You're welcome,
I hope to
Lindsay.
See many of you because, I mean, I don't see you now. You're just listening, and I have no idea who you are. Unless you leave us a review, I have no idea you're listening. So, listeners, we hope that we see some of you guys in Abe's Tech Talk on March 23rd. But we'll be back next week with another awesome podcast for you guys. So take care till then. Bye.
Goodbye.